It's not uncommon for the same people who show up at No War on Venezuela protests to also participate in pro-Palestinian protests. One might ask what the similarities are between Venezuela and Palestine. Adrian Pine is a non-resident scholar at UC Riverside's Latino Studies Center. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with her about what she sees as the deep links between the Israeli assault on Palestine and U.S. policy towards Venezuela, as well as Venezuelan international politics and drug trafficking in Latin America.
Palestine and Venezuela, what do they have to do with each other? They're in other parts of the world, and they seem to be very different situations. What do they have in common?
Palestine and Venezuela have so much in common. First of all, we have to keep in mind Israel's policy since its foundation of really interfering in other states' affairs with the aim of installing governments that will be supportive of the Zionist project, a genocidal project toward Palestinians. And so that includes arming and training the Guatemalan genocide in the 1980s with, you know, Elliot Abrams being the intermediary between Rios Montt and the Israelis. It includes various coups, working directly with Nazis like Klaus Barbie in Bolivia in the coup, the cocaine coup in 1980. It includes, you know, supporting the Argentinian dictatorship, which, of course, another fascist project in which a higher proportion of Jewish Argentinians were being tortured and disappeared than other ethnicities, and still, you know, reaching out to ensure the implementation of dictatorships that would then in turn support Israel. My colleague Majid Shihadeh refers to this as global Israel.
I remember the case of Jacobo Timmerman down there, too. Yeah.
I mean, so many of really the revolutionary Argentinians who gave their lives were also Jewish. And so that's an important thing to keep in mind. This has not been different in Venezuela. If we look at the Israel-Venezuela relationships over the years, what we see is that prior to Chavez, it was exceptionally strong. Chavez maintained relations with Israel for his first years in power, but after one of the major attacks on Gaza, he broke relations with Israel in around 2009. And there's a famous speech of his saying, you know, "Damn Israel, maldito sea Israel," like damn Israel for, you know, these violent acts that it is, you know, that it is carrying out. And so at that point, Venezuela, under Bolivarian Venezuela, under Chavez, became one of the staunchest allies of the Palestinian people. Now, it's no coincidence that the Nobel Peace Prize winner, the fascist Maria Corina Machado, in, I believe it was 2019, her party, Vente Venezuela, a fascist Venezuelan party that does not
even conservative, but fascist.
Fascist. They formed an official alliance with the Likud party, Netanyahu's party in Israel. And she has repeatedly congratulated Israel on its genocide against Palestinians. One of the first people who congratulated her after winning the Nobel Peace Prize was Netanyahu. And of course, we should recall that she dedicated that prize to Donald Trump. So we see, you know, the right wing of Venezuela is about as Zionist as, you know, as you could get. And so the projects are intertwined. I mean, this really is Israel trying to produce, I would say, structural Palestinians around the world in order to ensure the installation of dictatorships that that strip people's indigenous peoples of their sovereignty, that strip nations of their sovereignty in favor of the Zionist project. Now, there are many other types of overlap. You know, you see also, we can take an example of the tanker that was pirated in early December in the Caribbean Ocean that was bringing much needed Venezuelan oil to Cuba that had been bought and paid for that the US simply boarded and stole. They then brought that to Corpus Christi and it went to the Valero refinery. And that is where nearly 100% of the JP-8 fuel that is what Israel uses in its aerial bombardments as part of the genocide is produced. So we see these very direct connections, the same corporations profiting off of the violence against the Venezuelan people and the violence against against people in Palestine, Chevron in particular, but also the sale of Citgo recently, the Venezuelan oil company, was recently sold to a Zionist billionaire, major AIPAC supporter. And so he's going to benefit tremendously, as will Israel, from these illegal actions that have taken place, that are carried out, just tremendous violations of sovereignty and international law that very much parallel the way that Israel has been acting with, the full US support against Palestine.
I recall that decades ago, Israel started to train police forces and militaries in Latin America, and that was true in Venezuela, you're saying?
Yes, and of course, we have to remember that's also true in the United States. So just
Oh,
as,
police forces, yeah.
yeah, the police that that are killing people. I mean, I know ICE is a different story. There's no training there apparently, but the police forces in the United States are trained and in many cases equipped with technologies that have been developed to repress Palestinians. So technologies like the LRADs, the long-range acoustic devices, which are used to disperse crowds and create incredibly painful sound.
Oh, I remember that book by Anthony Lowenstein, was it? About Palestine as a laboratory for Israel.
Absolutely. And there's others who have written very eloquently about that as well, including Todd Miller. And exactly, that's what has happened. Israel has tested all of these and developed all these incredibly violent technologies for use to control Palestinians, to control this population, this sovereign and indigenous population. And they have made billions of dollars marketing it around the world. This is one of the things we saw in the Epstein files, that Epstein himself was facilitating and should be just as scandalous as his other horrific crimes, was the sale of technologies of repression to foreign governments. So including Ivory Coast, for example. Once these technologies are sold, these governments are locked into this relationship with Israel, regardless of who might win at the poll, the polls, in the subsequent election. And then Israel has greater control over increasing numbers of populations around the world in order to ensure its genocidal project at home.
And when you hear these companies discussed, it's often in terms of the stock market. Aren't they good investments?
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I would say from a capitalist perspective, they probably are. Right? Genocide is profitable. And if that's going to be their measure of good and bad, then we need, as people who care about humanity, to
We need
challenge that set of
what do we
values.
call it, an ethical restart or something like
Yeah,
that.
absolutely.
So, and would you say that the solidarity movements for Palestine and Venezuela are closely linked, that the same people who would support one would support the other?
Absolutely. There's been tremendous clarity on this from within Palestine. I've seen numerous organizations coming out with statements in solidarity with Venezuela. Also, various statements and mobilizations throughout the Arab world as well that are making those connections. But Venezuelans themselves are making this connection. We're seeing in the protests here in the United States, I went to the protests outside of the White House the day of the illegal kidnapping and violent bombing of Venezuela, and kidnapping of the president and the Congress member Celia Flores, his spouse. I went to the White House for a protest, and I mean, it was really impressive how many people showed up on 11 hours, 11 hours after the kidnapping itself, which says a lot. And almost all of the speakers were making those links between what is happening in Palestine and this atrocious violation of sovereignty and of human lives that has just taken place in Venezuela. I think the connections are impossible to ignore, especially for the people who have been out on the streets, who have been organizing in different ways, who have been, organizing through BDS, through all of the different actions that we can take for the past few years. I mean, it's impossible not to see the connections between that imperialist genocidal aggression and this one.
Do you think that there's more of a chance of resistance in or armed resistance in Venezuela than there is in Palestine?
Well, Venezuela has a militia that, wherein millions of Venezuelan citizens have been given weapons by the government. That's how much the government trusts its citizens. Think about this. I mean, and they're not seeing, in any case, I mean, that's. So the militia is organized. The militia has been activated. People are out on the streets every day in Venezuela in enormous numbers, and they're making clear that they're going to defend their territory no matter what.
Does that include opposition forces as well, or are they just pretty much pro-US?
There is almost nobody in Venezuela, including the opposition, who supports a U.S. invasion of Venezuela for what would seem to be obvious reasons, right? These bombs, they didn't just kill Chavistas, they killed opposition members as well. Over 100 people were killed, and many of them, yes, were military and by definition Chavista, but there were a number of civilians that were killed as well. The opposition, the internal opposition, and it's important to make this distinction. There's a diaspora opposition that is far more fascist in its politics than the opposition internal to Venezuela. The internal opposition also opposes U.S. invasion, and it opposes the Maduro government, and it considers it illegitimate, and it talks about it in terms of being a regime, but it does not support a U.S. invasion of the country because there's a recognition that there's no way that that would lead to democracy as they define it, right? There's no way that that would lead to anything but fascism. And that's not what the internal Venezuelan opposition wants. The story is different for the very white, privileged diaspora Venezuela opposition, which has a stance that is more aligned with the fascist Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Corina Machado in Israel and Trump.
And Trump, even though they seem to be very closely aligned, has not said that he would create a government where she was the head of.
Well, that it's funny because there are so many rumors circulating, and it's hard to know what to believe. Many are saying that he's so bitter that she won the Nobel Peace Prize and he didn't, that he's snubbing her. But another reading of it is the very realistic recognition that she is deeply unpopular within Venezuela. In Venezuelan territory, she is despised. Again, even the opposition does not look up to her, does not like her. And this is the same miscalculation that they made with Juan Guaido. I mean, actually, I guess they've learned from the Juan Guaido mistake in not trying to impose her as a leader in Venezuela, which they could not do in any case because the Maduro government is stronger than ever right now. He's not there, but there is complete unity among the current administration in their demands, first and foremost, that Maduro and Cilia Flores be returned to Venezuela. And then, secondly, that their sovereignty be respected.
And what about the other conservative leader, Gonzalez? Has he spoken out at all?
All he ever was a puppet for Maria Corina Machado, and I'm not even sure where he is right now. I should know this. I think he's probably in Spain, but he's never been anything that anybody cared about. She was barred from running because she had been directly working with foreign governments in ways that are prohibited by Venezuelan law. And so because of that, she was barred from running for president. And so she ran alongside the candidate who claimed he won but did not provide real evidence for that last year, which is the basis for all of these justifications by Trump and his allies that, well, Maduro wasn't president anyway, he stole the elections, as if somehow, even if that had been true, that would justify his violating sovereign foreign territory, violating all of these different
It's not
international
uncommon
laws.
that people will, quote, steal elections if you look around the world.
Well, I mean, Trump just in the past year intervened in several elections in Latin America, threatening the people of Argentina, sorry, I'm thinking Argentinian, threatening the Argentinian people and the Honduran people that if they did not vote for his preferred candidates there, that he would make their lives horrible, right? And in the case of Honduras, there was blatant fraud in the election. And Trump had declared ahead of time, that he wanted his candidate to win. And as part of that pressure campaign for Nasri Asfura, the candidate in Honduras that has been declared the winner of the elections, but this is a clearly fraudulent declaration. As part of Trump's campaign to make him president, he released the narco dictator Juan Orlando Hernandez, who had been sentenced to 40 years in U.S. Prison, in federal prison, by the same court that now Nicolas Maduro is in, for trafficking over 400 tons of cocaine to the United States. So there's mounds of evidence that this man turned Honduras into a narco dictatorship. He went through a whole trial, he was sentenced, and Trump just pardoned him. And now, in contrast, what we see on the very first day following the hearing that Maduro had, the U.S. government dropped the charges relating to drug trafficking because they have no basis. So they dropped the charges saying that he was the head of the Cartel de los Soles because, as all of those of us who know anything about Venezuela have been saying for months, there is no Cartel de los Soles. This is a non-existent entity that is a fiction that was created by the CIA in the 1990s. And I mean, I would encourage your readers to look this up. Sorry, your readers, your listeners. And so, in one case, we've got a proven narco dictator who transformed his entire country into a drug trafficking operation, Juan Orlando Hernandez in Honduras. And at the same time, Trump is saying that he's, on this campaign against drug trafficking to protect Americans, to somehow justify the utterly illegal invasion of a foreign country and kidnapping of their president, who it turns out is the head of a non-existent cartel, according to Trump, right? So all of their justifications fall apart.
Interesting that Marjorie Taylor Greene is talking about the drug angle and saying, well, they come from Mexico, the drugs, or they come from Asia. And he's not attacking the Mexican cartels.
Well, I mean, really, the drugs that the fentanyl comes from Mexico and the United States, that's true. But in terms of cocaine, he should be looking at Daniel Noboa, the president of Ecuador, who, of course, he's tight with because he's another narco-fascist. And I mean, Ecuador. I mean, Noboa has acted very much like Juan Orlando Hernandez in converting Ecuador into a narco economy, which has, of course, had horrific repercussions for the safety and the security of the people of Ecuador. And Noboa last year, like Milei and Trump, designated the Cartel de los Soles as a foreign terrorist organization, even though it does not exist, right? So he's doing all of these performative anti-drug things while actually being the greatest threat in terms of Trump's logics, right? That these countries are a threat to US security because they're sending drugs to us, which of course entirely denies the US responsibility for importing and consuming those drugs. But if he really wanted to target drugs, he should be looking at Daniel Noboa.
I have heard that the cartel does exist, but it doesn't really exist the way the administration says it does, like it's a network, a transnational network. Have you heard that at all?
So you might be talking about the Tren de Aragua, which is the other organization that Trump has designated as a foreign terrorist organization. And that is the one that, you know, he tried to use the War Powers Act to justify expelling all of those or actually extraordinarily rendering hundreds of Venezuelans to torture camps in El Salvador, claiming that they were members of the Tren de Aragua. And using the War Powers Act also to claim that they were part of a military invasion from Venezuela and that Nicolas Maduro was responsible for this. And these were people who were, many of them had no criminal convictions or arrests on their record whatsoever. Many of them had been in the country, you know, for a long time. And it was just that they had tattoos or whatever that were unrelated to, and you know, tattoo experts who know the actual small regional organization that is Tren de Aragua have made clear that they're not like MS-13 or 18 in Central America. These gangs that do very much have identifying tattoos, that's not a feature of Tren de Aragua. So again, that is an organization that has been largely wiped out in Venezuela by Nicolas Maduro and still, you know, has some international networks, but is not a major cartel.
And the idea that Maduro and other Venezuelan leaders are involved in the drug trade, is that just made up?
Yes, in a word. You know, what we see in Venezuela, the U.S., the DEA's own data shows that zero fentanyl is produced in Venezuela, first of all, and also not as trafficked through Venezuela. You know, the cocaine of the world is all produced in South America, but none of it is produced in Venezuela. The estimates that the U.S. government has is that I believe about 5% of the global of the cocaine that leaves South America and reaches other places in the world is trafficked through Venezuela, which is a minuscule amount given it where it is geographically and given that the percentage was far, far higher than that prior to Chavez's taking power. So what Venezuela has done is really crack down tremendously on the trafficking through its territories so that if you look at, the DEA has maps of drug flights and drug shipments over water as well. And you can see that it's only a very few that are coming out from Venezuela, whereas you have, you know, sort of, you'll have a few lines going from Venezuela sort of north toward the United States, whereas it's just practically a block of lines, you know, so many of them that they all merge together going from Colombia in the Pacific, going from, you know, leaving from Ecuador, leaving from, you know, through these other countries, Central American countries. You know, that's where the trafficking is happening. But Venezuela has far less cocaine passing through its territory and really cracks down on it. You know, they've really slowed that down and zero production.
That's retired American University anthropology professor Adrian Pine speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on January 13th, 2026.